It's a big investment. Right now, it's a tough swing. It will be even harder next quarter, she says quietly. We need to fix things now, immediately. She's right, and I know it. My fear is that her fix, these pieces, if I invest in them, if I take that leap, it will be Mark's lingerie's last. After this, there are no more favors to beg or pockets to pick. Let me show it to the sales team. I meet her eyes. If they like it, then let's do it.
Do what? The 14 pieces?
She stands and steps forward. Whatever you want. As long as you back the product up with cost margins and deliverability. I reach out and touch her hand, stopping her from picking up the presentations. She looks at me, and I choose my next words carefully. I'm wagering everything on this. On you. I need you to understand how important it is for this to succeed. She nods, and in her eyes, I see the confidence I once had. The reckless belief that no matter what, I would succeed. When did I lose that fire? When did I become convinced I would fail? She turns to leave, and without her, the room feels dead.
Kate. Black strips of latex cut across spandex. A collar with a front ring, back buckle. Hidden underwire that makes the sample-sized model look magnificently large-breasted. In any other setting, it should be trashy. But with the right lines, cuts, and support, it is sophisticatedly beautiful. 6 months into this job, and I fight the urge to jump up and down like a schoolgirl. It's uncomfortable. The model punctures my elation with two simple words. How uncomfortable? I glance down at Vern, the technical designer who looks at the model. Pretty bad. She tilts her head, then turns it. The worst is the collar thing. It's itchy. On the edges or the backing? Vern stands and moves behind her. The edges. What else is uncomfortable? I look down at the fitting schedule, cursing to myself. We are behind schedule, not just for today, but for this month. I shot for 22 new pieces, and I'm kicking myself in the ass for it. Something that seemed possible 2 months ago turned difficult 1 month ago, and now appears to be pretty fucking impossible. I glance back at the model and fight the urge to scream at her to hurry up. Maybe this is why Claudia was such a bitch. I am just 6 months into this role, and I can already feel the fraying of human qualities. It feels like it's cutting into my ribcage. The boning.
Okay, move around for me and tell me when the pain increases or decreases.
Pain? I interrupt Vern. Or discomfort? The model stiffens, her lips parting, eyes widening, and I growl without looking over my shoulder. You aren't supposed to be here. From behind me, he chuckles.
You didn't think I'd let you have all of the fun, did you?
I turn, and from my place in the stool, we are eye level. Fittings aren't fun. No one thinks fittings are fun. I like fittings. The model breathes, and she suddenly doesn't look uncomfortable at all. Trey's eyes don't move to her. They stay on me. I thought he was beautiful from my spot on the ground. At this elevated level, he's even more devastating. I hop down from the stool before I lose all intelligence. What do you think? I nod to the woman.
It's gorgeous.
He walks around her slowly. Right, it looks great, but she's saying it's uncomfortable. I can manage, it's not that bad, she offers. Vern mumbles something under his breath, and Trey chuckles in response.
Uh-huh.
I shake my head at them. Stop that shit! I push at Trey's shoulder, then point to the door. And you, go crunch numbers somewhere.
I've got a dozen more of these to work through. I flip over the page. Vern, you got this? I'm going to move on to Cecile's model.
I leave in a minute. Let me borrow you for a second.
I look up from the page. Now? I shake my head. No, I'm going to keep these guys here till midnight at this rate. Whatever it is, shoot me an email or show me in the morning. I can't deal with any more problems or decisions or his need for an opinion on the interior pages of the spring catalog.
I'm borrowing Kate, he calls out. Everyone take five.
No one take five, I yell. Everyone keep working. He pulls at my arm and successfully manages to drag me toward the door. I half-heartedly struggle until we are in the hall, the door closed. What? I beg. I've seriously got so much to do.
I just got off the phone with Paris.
And? I grip his arm.
They doubled their last order. They loved your designs.
I shriek, throwing my arms around his neck, my clipboard catching him on the side of his face. I apologize as I grip him tightly, jumping up and down. When I release him, he rubs the side of his face with a wince. Sorry, I breathe. I'm just so happy.
Are we able to deliver?
Yes, I say quickly. I think so. I nod, my fingers drumming excitedly over the clipboard. If you stop interrupting fittings and turning my model's brains to mush... He chuckles and steps back.
I'll let you do your thing. I've got more pitches to make.
I smile and hold his gaze. It's his victory in sales and mine in design. And this moment, this baby moment of joy before the panic returns, is the best in my career so far. I replay his words in my mind.
They doubled their last order. They loved your designs.
Mark's lingerie is on its way back.
The Honor Bar in Beverly Hills. We steal two spots in the corner, my purse hanging off the back of the chair, his jacket taken off, and order dinner. I ignore my diet and get a cheeseburger. He orders the same, then adds two Coronas. I make a face. I can't drink tonight. I pull at the clip, loosening my hair. My scalp burns and I run my fingers through my roots, massaging the skin.
Why not? We're done for today. I'll have your car brought to your house.
He smiles and pushes the tabletop candle to the side.
I think you need a night to relax.
I'm relaxed. I lean against the wall and close my eyes.
You're exhausted. There's a difference.
I am exhausted. Half of me is dying for my bed, my quiet apartment, my ability to sleep in late tomorrow. The other half of me feels like celebrating. It was that half of me that accepted his dinner invite.
Why don't you call Craig? See if he can join us.
The waiter returns, beers in hand, and I watch him set down the bottles. He can't, I reply. He has a chemistry association meeting tonight. It's a monthly thing. I smile. Exciting stuff.
Sounds like it.
He lifts his beer.
Cheers.
I lift my bottle. Just one drink, I say. I can't be out too late.
Sure,
he shrugs.
You are the boss.
I smile at the joke and take a sip. I lean forward. So I walk into the room and they are both standing there naked. I giggle, a hiccup forcing its way out. I thought they were gay, and I started to apologize, you know, for interrupting them.
You started to apologize to your boyfriend?
Trey leans forward, a confused look on his face.
Yes,
I wince. It was right when there was all this PC stuff about accepting homosexuality, and all I could think was that I wanted him to know that it was okay. You know, him being gay.
I don't understand where this story is going.
I lower my voice and lean in. They weren't gay. They were... I glance to the table beside us to make sure they aren't listening. They were waiting for me. He doesn't respond, and I sigh, forced to fully explain it. They wanted to have sex with me. Together. I take a sip of the beer. It's called a threesome. The corner of his mouth lifts into a smirk.
Oh, yes. I'm familiar with the term.
Of course he is. He's probably had one. Or two. Or five. I move past his smirk and on with my story. So anyway, that was my first boyfriend. A terrible candidate to lose my virginity to.
Wait. He holds up a palm. You just skipped over all of the good stuff.
He sits back in his chair and lifts his beer.
Did you enjoy it?
Enjoy what? I eye my now empty beer and try to calculate how many I've had. Three? Four? The waiter swings by and delivers two more.
The threesome.
Ew! I make a face. Seriously? You think I did that? He studies my face carefully, then shrugs, his broad shoulders lifting the crisp white shirt.
I guess not.
He sounds almost disappointed. Why would I? I press, and now I'm getting irritated. Do you know how offensive that is? Two guys taking turns on me? Using me? I didn't even know the other guy.
Easy, Kate.
He pushes aside his old beer and reaches for the new one.
I was just asking for the story.
The story is that I left, and I don't know what they did amongst themselves. I make a face, then realize my voice may have gotten a little too loud in my indignation.
Sorry for yelling,
I whisper loudly.
It's okay,
he whispers back. I pick up a spoon and stab at the brownie, a dessert from an hour ago, one that has been stabbed to death by my occasional tastings. It is okay. It's more than okay. It's normal. Normal people think that threesomes are gross. Craig would definitely think that threesomes are gross. I've never even told him that story for fear that he would judge me out of mere proximity to the act.
So, Trey drawls, you don't like threesomes. Anything else I should know about you?
I glance up and meet his eyes. And with just a flash of that smile, we are back to normal. The lights of Torrance are blurring, the taxi bumping along the street, and I watch two bums argue in the brief moment before we pass. It's the next right, I call out. Trey checks his phone.
God, I can't believe it's almost midnight.
Normally in bed by this time? I tease.
Normally in someone's bed by this time.
He grins at me, a playful one, and I groan in response. You didn't have to escort me home. I'm a big girl. I could have gotten my own ride.
I would have worried. This way I can properly see you to your door and earn gentleman points in the process.
He looks out the window.
No offense, Kate, but we have to get you out of this neighborhood.
I reach down and grab my purse, the car slowing down before my building. This neighborhood is fine, but if you want to give me a raise, I shrug. I won't fight you on it.
Stay here. I'll get your door.
He gets out and I wait, watching as he approaches my door and opens it with a grand flourish.
M'lady.
I laugh, stepping from the cab and over the broken sidewalk. Before me, my building looms, and I have a moment of drunk appreciation for my first floor unit. He tells the cabbie to wait and walks me to the door, pausing before it, his face growing serious.
Monday, let's talk about a raise. Wow, you really are drunk. I pull out my keys and flip through them.
No, I'm serious.
He meets my eyes.
I'll give you anything you want.
He meant an increase in salary, but it came out wrong. His voice too husky. His body too close. I step back, but our gaze holds, and I almost change direction, lean in, reach out. He clears his throat and the moment breaks. I look down and manage to fit the key in the building's front door. Thanks for seeing me to the door. The words squeak a little on their way out. I'll be fine from here. He steps back, and the darkness of the walkway obscures his face.
Have a good night, Kate.
He pauses, his hands sliding into his pockets. Behind him, the cab exhaust smokes in the night air.
See you tomorrow.
I give a little wave and escape inside, my heart beating, hands trembling, as I flip the deadbolt over. He said he'd give me anything, but in that moment, it wasn't a raise I wanted. Chapter 7 Kate.
You're packing it wrong.
Craig stands next to me, his hands on his hips, his head shaking. It's fine. I shut the suitcase lid and lean on it, struggling with the zipper.
Kate, stop.
He bats at my hand.
We need to pull everything out and repack. You don't need so many clothes.
What I don't need is you telling me how to pack.
Go in the living room,
I say crossly.
Let me zip this up.
I push on his shoulder and watch as he steps back, a pained look in his eyes. It's cruel not to let him pack, to not let him use his t-shirt folding board to ensure that all of the edges are crisp and similarly sized. But letting him pack would mean that he'd see the red lace lingerie that I tucked inside, a new Marks item that hasn't even rolled off to stores yet. I'd like to keep it a surprise, something to pull out on Saturday night, in celebration of my birthday. I get the suitcase closed, the zipper straining, but holding, and I lug it into the living room, giving a ta-da motion that goes completely ignored by Craig, who zeroes in on each of my suitcase's wheels, examining, and then lubricating them, using a tiny squeeze bottle that he returns to a Ziploc bag upon completion. Ready? I say dryly, glancing at my watch. It doesn't matter if he isn't. We've got a good 5 hours until the flight. There was no earthly reason why we would leave the house now, except that Craig doesn't like to leave anything to chance. I thought he overdid it when we went to San Diego for the night. It turns out that international travel puts him on a whole new plane of neurotics. I eye Craig and wonder if I'm making a mistake bringing him. This is a work event, after all. A shopping trip to purchase leftover inventory from an old undergarments factory. Our 4-day trip, if the inventory is quality, could save us a few $100,000. In my initial mention of the trip to Craig, I could have just left it at that. Instead, fueled by wine and a $200 scratch-off ticket win, I'd invited him along.
I'm ready.
He tests out the wheels, rolling the suitcase in a quick circle.
I've got our itinerary and travel documents in the car already. Let's go.
I smile and loop my arm through his. I'm excited. He returns the smile, leaning forward and giving me a quick peck on the lips.
Me too, sweetie.
Bon voyage! I cheer, throwing my arms into the air.
Allons-y, he corrects. Bon voyage is wishing someone else a good trip.
Sure, whatever. I grab the handle of my suitcase and skip toward the door. Hong Kong is both everything I expected and like nothing I could have imagined. I stand in the middle of a busy street and lift my arms, spinning in the crowd, the neon lights everywhere, the air full of foreign smells and sounds, the clatter of languages like a comforting blanket of anonymity. I catch Trey's eyes and wave,
the corner of his mouth pulling up in response, his eyes dropping back to the cash in his hand. His discussion with the street vendor continuing. A back-and-forth negotiation about scooter rentals. A conversation that Craig is panicking over, his repeated attempts to get my attention ignored.
Relax!
I call out to him. He doesn't trust Trey. That is the problem. He hasn't learned the carefree ease with which Trey manages to handle things. It's been 9 months, and I'm just now learning to leap when he offers his hand. Because that's how he is. He doesn't ask you to risk unless he is taking that journey alongside you. If I fail, he fails. And if a street peddler in the biggest city in the world screws Craig over, he's screwing over Trey Marks also. And that scenario is as unlikely as, well... A tiny speck of moisture hits my cheek, and I look up in delight. A kaleidoscope of white flurries drifting down. I jerk forward, waving my hands in big circles to get their attention. Guys! It's snowing! Trey stands, and Craig and I watch as he lifts his glass toward us.
A toast.
He announces, that trademark grin pulling at the edge of his mouth. I glance down at my own wine glass, surprised to find it half empty. Hadn't he just topped me off, what, 5 minutes ago? Or 10? It was when we'd been telling Craig that story, the one about Marie from accounting and her Halloween costume. I giggle and lift my glass. We should drink more. We should travel more. With my latest raise and Craig's... Well, Craig never spends any money, so he should have mountains of it. There is no reason why we don't have more fun. Like this. Halfway across the world in a place where foreign languages bounce off exotic walls, and we are eating fried silkworms, for God's sake. Why in 3 years together are we just doing this now? Trey clears his throat and looks at me in an almost stern fashion.
Kate, I do believe that you are drunk.
I giggle again. A completely uncharacteristic act. And stop myself, analyzing my alcohol consumption and present mood. I am drunk. I feel almost proud at the fact. And that itself is even further testimony to the fact that I must be drunk. I, Kate Martin, eternal good girl and daughter of all eyes, am officially drunk. In Hong Kong. With two of the best guys.
She's about to cry,
Craig blurts out, looking at Trey with concern. I sniff. I can't help it. They are so different. Craig is... so good to me. And he tries so hard to be the best partner. He's going to be a wonderful father, and he's such a good person on the inside. And then you have Trey, who is, like, this perfect, sexy unicorn. Not that he has a horn sticking out of his head or anything like that. He's just so... I close my eyes and try to find the right word. The one that embodies how special and unique he is. How he can make my day by just smiling. Like how, right now, he is looking at me in the kindest, sweetest way. As if...
Don't cry,
Craig says very loudly, his face close to mine, my nose catching a whiff of the tuna tartare he had for an appetizer.
Okay,
I say back, just as loudly and exaggerated as he had, as if being drunk made me deaf in some way.
I will not cry.
My eyes meet with Trey's, and he winks. 2 a.m. My buzz peaks, then falls, my joy ebbing into something else. Something dark and contemplative, where all of my thoughts bubble to the surface and demand to be examined. Craig and I step into the elevator, and I watch the floor numbers rise. I think there is something fundamentally wrong with my relationship. In 3 years of dating, we haven't had a single fight. In 3 years, we have fit together easily, me overlooking any imperfections and hiding any qualities that I thought he wouldn't approve of. I love him, but I've never been passionate about him. I've never obsessed over him. Shouldn't a woman at some point obsess over the man she's going to spend the rest of her life with? Once, when I was looking up an email on Craig's phone, I had the momentary idea to check his text messages to see who he was communicating with and what was being said. I hadn't. The idea preposterous that Craig would be cheating on me or flirting with someone else. A waitress once hit on him, and he got so worked up about it that he made the poor waitress sit down and listen to him explain the history of our relationship. We stopped going to that restaurant, just to avoid another uncomfortable interaction with her. Our hotel room is dark. No lights left on. The curtains drawn. I open the top drawer of the dresser, moving aside my sweater, and consider the lingerie set hidden underneath it. I replace the sweater and sit on the bed, listening to Craig brush his teeth, then floss. When he comes into the room and unzips his pants, I watch him remove them, hanging them neatly back on the hanger, his body slowly unwrapped as he removes his shirt and follows the same process. His body is the perfect specimen for a doctor's office. Well exercised, no flab, but only moderate muscle tone. Nothing bulky enough to stress the heart. He comes to me naked, gently pulling me to my feet, and we kiss, his tongue tasting of wintergreen, his skin cool beneath my fingers. He pulls at the zipper of my dress, and I help him. He goes to his knees, and I lie back on the bed, one leg over his shoulder, his mouth gentle against me. And I dig my fingers into his hair when I come. I think it's the alcohol that has numbed me. There is no reason, when he moves to the bed and pushes inside of me, that I don't emotionally react. No reason why, when we finish and I roll over in bed, my dress still on, hair still up, that I should feel alone. But I do. I lay my hand across the dark green sheets, the diamond glinting at me, and I feel the deep certainty that I am making a mistake. At 4 a.m., I wake up Craig and tell him everything.
Trey. I end the call and nod to the waiter, waiting for him to replace my drink. I eye the third place setting and regret for the 100th time allowing her to bring her fiancé along. Initially, I had thought it a good idea. I thought that seeing her happy, seeing her future, it might make everything between her and I a little clearer, a little less tempting. That plan backfired as soon as they arrived. This guy isn't right for her. Hell, he's completely wrong for her. But I can't tell her that. If I do, she'll dismiss it, and then there will be animosity. And as close as we've become during the past 9 months, I'm not certain we can bury that conversation and move on. I run a finger over the tines of my fork, pushing down on the silver, irritated by the fact that he is here, putting a damper on everything. Today, we should be celebrating. The merchandise purchase complete, a chunk of money saved, everything continuing to move towards success. Instead, I'll be staring across the table at him and pairing all of the ways he is wrong for her against all of his strengths. Unfortunately, he does have a few strengths. He's attractive, in a Brooks Brothers, men's catalog sort of way. Perfectly neat hair, straight teeth, boyish good looks. He's successful, assuming she's happy as middle class. He's smart, annoyingly so. Something he has gone out of his way to point out. He also seems oblivious to the fact that I want to fuck his future wife.
He seems to have no concern over our long hours, or casual familiarity, or the moments that our eyes meet across the table. Wordless communication and just the tiny movements of a smile or glance. He shouldn't be this calm, or this friendly. He should be questioning our friendship, and subtly asserting his dominance. There should be a healthy distance between us, a squaring off of masculinity, a rolling up of sleeves in the fight over this woman. My woman. That is how all of this should play out. That is the game I know how to fight. I can't fight a nice, well-mannered pushover. It would make me look like an ass. It would push her away. I reach for my glass and mentally correct myself. It doesn't matter how he reacts, or how the game should be played. I can't fight him because I shouldn't have her. It's the mantra I keep forgetting, the plan that keeps going astray. The restaurant door opens, and I know it's her from the smile on the maitre d's face. Where's Craig? I pull out her chair, glancing toward the front of the restaurant. It's terrible, but a part of me hopes that he is sick. Some sort of stomach bug that will keep him in their room and out of our hair for the next 2 days.
Something came up late last night. He's on the way to the airport now. He has to go home.
She picks up the napkin and spreads it in her lap, her eyes on the motion. Something is wrong, her voice forcibly light. I sit down and smooth my own napkin, keeping my gaze on her.
Do you need to go with him?
I can handle the rest of the meetings without you.
No.
The shake of her head is short and quick, almost a shudder.
It's fine. I'll see him when I get back.
She smiles at me. And something is definitely wrong. The lines of her face pulling at the wrong places, her eyes avoiding mine, her study of the menu uncharacteristically focused. I fight a war between protective aggression and giving her space, my tongue poised, unsure of how to act. I catch her eyes, and there is a flash of raw vulnerability, silently begging me to leave it alone. I reach forward, passing her the basket of bread, and eye the ring that still sits on her finger.
So, no Craig?
No.
And our meeting with the factory rep is at 10?
Yes.
I hope you use bigger words in our meeting. You're the only chance we have to sound intelligent.
The corner of her mouth twitches, and it feels like a monumental victory.
Okay.
And you know you've piled a lot of extra work on me.
Her eyebrow raises, and a hint of life enters her eyes.
In what way?
I let out a heavy sigh. Now I've got to entertain you for the next 2 days, play host, get you drunk on Hong Kong sake, and give you a vacation you'll never forget. She rolls her eyes and picks up the menu.
Shut up. We both know I'll be getting room service tonight, and you'll be banging some Chinese whore.
I'm canceling the Chinese whore, I say with a hurt tone. I mean, I was going to bang her, but you and your inconvenient loneliness just cost her the greatest orgasm of her life.
Oh, my God.
She lifts the menu higher to hide her smile.
Please stop.
Her foot bumps against my leg, and I look at my own menu, wishing that ring was off her finger and this restaurant was deserted.
Kate. I'm not drinking that. I call up to Trey, hoping he can read lips, because the noise in the club is deafening. He smiles down at me, and I tug on his dress pants, smacking a hand across the top of his shoe to get his attention. Standing on top of the bar, he calls out something, and the crowd erupts into cheers, a chant starting, which I can't understand. I raise my hands in question, and he points to the girl next to me, yelling something at her. The girl, a pigtailed sex pot with cat eyes and combat boots, leans forward and presses her mouth to the ice block, her eyes flicking up to Trey. He tilts a bottle, and red liquor flows down a gully, through the ice,
and into her mouth. It looks unsanitary and extremely sexual. Two directions I have no plans of stumbling down tonight. She closes her eyes and swallows, lifting her mouth from the ice and wiping across her lips with the back of the hand. She gestures me forward. No! I wave my hands at Trey, shaking my head emphatically. But the crowd chants louder, fists pounding the bar top, bodies beginning to jump in concert. He winces as if he is innocent in all of this, then holds up one finger.
One shot, he yells. Just one.
I can't. If I do this, if I yield to him, he will be hell. It will be like giving the devil keys to my kingdom. He will know that if he flashes me that smile and gives me that wink, that I will bend, will behave, will do whatever he wants me to do. And I do mean whatever. His eyes catch mine, and he crouches, smoothly setting down the liquor and swinging off the bar, landing beside me, his hand cupping the back of my waist and pulling me against him. He lowers his mouth to my ear.
Just one, Kate, for me.
Maybe it is the proximity to him, or the way his voice softens on the last two words. Maybe it is the fact that I have to turn away from him and take that shot, or I'll tilt my chin up and kiss him. Whatever the reason, I step away and up to the ice. I tell myself that ice is sterile, and it doesn't matter that I'm putting my mouth in the same place where a stranger's was. I tell myself that because I didn't tell Trey that I broke up with Craig. It makes this night fine, removes any romantic layers, and drinking with my boss is as inappropriate as this will get. I close my eyes and wait for the alcohol, and tell myself that I don't care if I look sexy, or if Trey is proud of me, or impressed, or anything else. The liquor hits my tongue and it's ice cold. I swallow it and stand, some leaking from the side of my mouth. As I go to clean it, Trey's hand is there, his fingers soft against my chin, and our eyes meet as he wipes away the liquor, and then moves his hand up, gently sucking the edge of his thumb into his mouth. Good Lord, this man will be the death of me. My flight to Hong Kong had been bearable, Craig and I lucky enough to be seated next to one of those scrawny teenagers who wears headphones and doesn't hog the armrest. But flying back, Trey upgrades me to first class, an expensive transition I initially balk at. The mid-flight neck massage, private television, and sushi softens my resistance. The full bed, private curtain, and 7-hour nap have me swearing off coach forever.
Is everything okay with Craig?
I consider the question without turning to look at him. He's fine. It was a work emergency. I think he's handled it. It'd be easy to tell him the truth. I should tell him the truth. Trey isn't just my boss. We've become friends. It'd be weird not to tell him. But telling him I've broken off my engagement will lead to questions, ones that I haven't quite worked out in my head. Maybe, back in the U.S., I will change my mind. Maybe after cataloging all of the decision-making factors, I'll realize that I shouldn't have made such a life-altering decision while drinking. Maybe I'll call Craig and tell him that I'd made a mistake. Or maybe I won't. I feel absolutely zero regret over my decision. If anything, I feel better. The knot of anxiety over our future gone, my possibilities wide open. Last night, I had the best night of my life. At some point, we had danced in a dark club off a side street, one where drag queens greeted us at the door and disco pumped through the speakers. I've never danced. Not in college, definitely not in grad school. The formal events that Craig and I sometimes attended had a few slow songs we'd sway to, in the most dignified manner possible. But nothing like last night. That had been arms-up, ass-shaking gyrations. We had moved deep into the crowd, in a place of rough, jam-packed movement, his arms protectively wrapping around me, my body occasionally brushing against his to the tune of the techno. When we made it to the upstairs bar, we took tequila shots and found a jukebox. I put on a country song, managed to mix it with an Irish jig, and Trey laughed and told me that I was a terrible dancer. He also, over tapas in another bar, brushed my hair out of my face and told me that I was brilliant. I don't remember my response. I don't remember much of the rest of the evening, except that I fell asleep in a taxi, and he ended up carrying me to my room.
"Is it bad that I'm almost happy he went home early?"
He leans his head back against the headrest and turns to smile at me.
"I mean, I'm sure it ruined your birthday, but..."
"It's not bad." I gave him a half-hearted smile. I think it was a good co-worker bonding experience. I reach out my glass, determined to return us to our proper relationship. To Mark's lingerie. His tongue runs along the inside of his bottom lip, and he, almost reluctantly, lifts up his own glass.
To Mark's, and to bonding with co-workers.
I tip back my glass and look away. Chapter 8. Kate.
I just don't understand why you haven't told Trey.
Jess pushes the shopping cart forward and stops beside a rack of purses, picking up a knockoff Betsy Johnson clutch.
It's been a month since you and Craig broke up. What do you guys talk about all the time?
Business. I spin a rack of sunglasses and pluck a pair off the top. And other stuff. I don't know. He doesn't bring up Craig.
You guys are weird.
She holds up the clutch.
Do you think this is worth $40?
No. I push the glasses on my face and bend down, looking into the mirror.
We aren't weird.
You're totally weird. Even Mom thinks you're weird, so that's pretty much the kiss of death.
In what way are we weird?
The glasses don't look terrible on me. I tilt my head, considering them.
It's the way you look at each other, like you guys are having subliminal conversations. It's rude, you know, when other people are there. I felt left out having lunch with the two of you. Plus, there's the whole attraction thing.
I take off the sunglasses and check the price tag, sighing as I return them to the rack.
Lots of friends are attracted to each other.
No. She tosses the clutch onto the pile and pushes the cart forward.
Actually, they aren't. It never works out.
You liked Gabe Jordan.
That was 9th grade, Kate.
She checks her watch. Shit, it's already 2. We need to hurry. I watch as she turns down a housewares aisle, her steps increasing in speed as she moves past the cooking items, beelining for a display of picture frames. Maybe Trey and I are weird. I certainly feel ungrounded at times, as if we are tiptoeing closer and closer to the line of inappropriateness. It's the reason I haven't told him about Craig. I feel like my fake relationship with him is a layer of protection, something to point to and say, "See? We are just friends. We must be, since I am happily engaged."
"Hasn't he asked about your ring?"
Jess asks, carefully placing a picture frame into the cart.
"I told him I need to get it resized."
A terrible excuse, but one he hadn't questioned.
"I still can't believe how smoothly your breakup went."
She pauses.
"Actually, never mind. I can. If I ever divorce Adam, I'm having Craig handle the entire thing."
She is right. My breakup with Craig couldn't have been more peaceful. He hadn't argued or shouted. There had been no tears or debates. He had listened to my fumbling attempt at discussing my feelings,
then had moved to the closet and packed his bag. Before stepping out of the hotel room, we discussed our relationship going forward, cordial acquaintances, and whether he should contribute to the hotel bill. No. I've no doubt that, in his perfectly organized home office, there had been an in-case-we-break-up folder, complete with a list of to-do items. By the time I returned to the U.S., I had a box on my kitchen counter with all of my things from his house, along with a typed list of items he was requesting from me. He had paper-clipped a counselor's business card to the top of the list, along with signed papers from the bank that removed his name from all of our joint accounts. I'd returned his things the next week, and hadn't heard from him since. I lean against the wall. I'm worried telling Trey will change our relationship. She looks at me.
That might not be a bad thing. He's ridiculously hot. You need a new man.
She shrugs as if my problems are solved. It's not that simple. Maybe if we were just friends. I rub my eyes. But the company needs us both, and he knows that. I don't think he'd even do anything with me, for fear of messing up that.
Okay, she drawls out, nodding at a passerby and moving farther down the aisle. You're not making any sense. Do you want to date the guy or not?
Do I want to date Trey? It isn't even worth considering. I can't date Trey.
No,
I manage to say.
No?
She raises her eyebrows in the knowing way that only a sister can.
No,
I repeat, and this time the short word is heavy with resolve. She only laughs in response.
Trey. The brunette is a younger version of Kate, her breasts swelling over the top of the balconette bra. I watch as she lounges against the pillows, one knee pulling up, a hip curving. A man in a suit steps forward, stopping before her.
What do you think?
Kate asks quietly. Bulbs flash, and there is a snap of the shutter. It's a gamble, I shrug. But I like to gamble.
Think it'll be too risque for the stores?
The man kneels before the model, his hand on her thigh. I'm not sure, but marketing loves the idea of sexualizing the shoot. They think they can get the photos to go viral. I pull out my phone and refresh my email.
Still waiting on the Neiman Marcus order?
Yup. We are solidly in the black for this season. However, their national order could give us firm footing to launch proper advertising. I lock the phone and slide it into my pocket.
By the way,
she shifts in her heels, and I look over, something in her delivery giving me pause.
Craig and I broke up.
It is so unexpected that I take a step back, my heart doing a confused jig, made of elation and dread. I swallow. Really?
Yeah, I just thought you should know.
She looks down at her clipboard, making a mark on the page.
Not that it changes anything, I just...
Why did you break up? She had to have ended it. There was no way that he, that any man, would walk away from her.
I don't know.
Her shoulders lift.
I just felt that I might be making a mistake. And our relationship felt...
She pauses, and I feel my entire soul hang on the end of that sentence.
Like a business relationship.
She finally concludes. I understand what she is saying. The sterile way they had interacted, Craig's formal planning and execution of every task. But still, the word choice stabs at me. I force myself to step closer to Kate, to return to our prior positions, my eyes on the models, the man now leaning over the woman, pinning her wrists to the bed. Kate tucks her hair behind her ear, and I catch a whiff of her perfume. She slides a hand down the shooting schedule, and I watch the delicate slide of her fingers across the page. She's single. My Kate is single.
No ring on her finger, no calls on her phone. Nothing to stop me from hooking my hand around her waist and pulling her against me. I turn and step away. Call out to a photographer's assistant and have him walk me through the lighting. Working with her for the 10 months, it has already been a strain on my willpower. Now, with Craig removed from the equation, will I be able to control myself? I glance back at her, my gaze moving up her body, enjoying the feminine curves, the casual slouch, the confident way she calls out to the photographer. In my pocket, my phone vibrates, and I pull out the device, my heartbeat quickening at the email notification that appears. Neiman. The timing is suspect, and I glance up to the ceiling, wondering if the big man upstairs is trying to send me a message. I open the email and scroll quickly through the order, a smile pulling at my mouth as I see the purchase numbers. I stride over to her and wrap my arms around her, my chest to her back, my chin on her shoulder, my phone held out before her. "Look," I whisper, and I fight the urge to gather her against me, to press my hips forward against her body, to feel the curve of that ass against me. "Look what you did." She twists around, throwing her arms around my neck, hugging it tightly. "We did," she states. And when she pulls away, she is beaming. She's right. We did it. And damn it, I can't mess everything up now.
Chapter 9. Kate. 4 months later. Las Vegas. I win $3,000 on a slot machine, and I'm stretched out on my bed, basking in my newfound riches, when Trey walks in. He cocks a brow at me and holds out his wrist.
"I need help. This cufflink is a bitch."
I roll over and sit upright on the edge of the bed. When he steps forward, between my legs, I look up at him.
"This could get interesting,"
he murmurs, a wicked gleam in his eyes. His shoes settle into place, and his pant legs brush against the inside of my knees. "It won't." The man is a complete tease. He flirts like a teenage boy, then walks away and leaves me panting.
"There are certain lines I don't cross, and fucking my employees is one of them."
His line from my interview plays on repeat in my head. After our San Francisco road trip, I looked up Vika Nice. Like I had expected, she is beautiful, and very different from me. Blonde instead of brunette, taller than me, and thin instead of curvy. She has that sophisticated scowl that I've never mastered. I can see why a man would go for her, and I can see in the tattered remains of Mark's lingerie what inter-office relationships can lead to. I hadn't thought much about it while I was with Craig, but in the last 5 months as a single woman, Trey's stance on fraternization has haunted me. And right now, his belt is at eye level, the buckle begging to be freed, zipper yanked down, and all of Trey Marx's mysteries unveiled. My hand hovers above the belt. It would be so easy. I sigh and reach past it for his waiting shirt sleeve, my hands quick and efficient as I fasten the cufflink. I look up at him and stick out my tongue.
"What is that for?"
He extends the other hand, a smile playing across his lips. "You. You and your ridiculous temptingness." The truth slips out before I can harness it in. I bite my bottom lip and look down at the cufflink, struggling more with getting this one through the hole.
"Oh, good. I was worried I was losing my touch."
He flips over his hands, offering them to me, and I pull, getting to my feet. "Nope. No worries there." I eye his suit. "So it's this kind of a dinner?"
"You were expecting the buffet? Kino and sweatpants?"
"Don't tempt me," I groan, moving past him into the bathroom. I've worn heels for like 14 hours now.
You don't have to come.
He stands in the doorway and watches me. I grab a washcloth and rub it over my face, removing my makeup. I glance in the mirror at my face, slightly pink from the hot water, and frown. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised that Trey isn't trying to fuck me. Not when he sees me like this, in threadbare yoga pants and a shirt I borrowed from his suitcase without asking. That's what he gets for owning t-shirts that feel like suede and for booking us in adjoining rooms. I may be bringing his company success, but I'm not above blatantly stealing from his suitcase.
I know Mira and her husband, he continues. Why don't you take the night off? Get room service and a movie.
I turn off the water and glare at him in the mirror. Her husband owns 37 department stores in California. I don't care if you know Mira. Their first order, if we can get it, will be huge. No offense, but I'm not letting you screw it up.
How can I not take offense to that?
He barks out a laugh and follows me to my suitcase for a straightening iron. It's the truth. I plug in the iron. And don't flirt with her.
Oh, jealous Kate. I knew you were in there somewhere.
I'm not jealous. I'm sane. You don't know how you are. What you do to women. You say something casual to her and her husband is going to bury you into next year.
Kate.
And he isn't going to care if...
Kate.
He steps forward, pushing me against the bathroom counter. The line of his body hard, fitting perfect into my curves. One of his legs moving forward in between mine. A stiff line of muscle against an area that hasn't gotten any attention since Craig in Hong Kong.
It'll be fine. I've met her husband before. Everything will be fine.
He drops his eyes from mine and down to my lips. His hands are resting on either side of me, flat upon the counter, caging me in. And I flinch when he moves just his thumbs, the scrape of them slowly caressing the sides of my hips. I can feel the delicate shift of air as he exhales, his eyes tracing over the lines of my lips, and I wet them in preparation. I should step aside, make a joke, mention the time. Instead, I close my eyes, my chin lifting, and wait for his kiss. I hear his groan in the moment before he pushes off the counter, his body leaving mine, my skin suddenly cool without the heat of his touch. I open my eyes, and he is there, against the wall of the bathroom, his hand worrying over his mouth, then crashing through his hair. He steps through the doorway, and then there is the slam of the connecting door, and I am alone. I sag against the counter and let out a curse.
Trey. My shoes clip across the hotel tile, a dominating sound that grounds me, another piece of the external appearance of control. I need the illusion, while inside I fall to pieces. My company needs her. I need her. And, unfortunately, so does my cock. And that right there is how things fall apart. I step toward the maitre d' and hope like hell she doesn't come to dinner.
Kate. My hair up. I wear my best suit, a sexy YSL number that Trey bought for me in New York. He had groaned when I had stepped from the dressing room with it on. A very similar groan, in fact, to the one that had ripped from him in the bathroom. Maybe he likes to torture himself? Or maybe he can only get himself off and women are all just pawns in his ridiculous game of arousal. Whatever the reason, this dinner is too important to let our misplaced sexual tension get in the way. I pass the hostess stand, my heels careful on the slick wood floor, and move through the tables, looking for him. In the back, in an elegant foretop overlooking the strip, his eyes meet mine. He rises from his seat, and I step toward him.
Mira and Edward are from San Diego. She is a hugger and a brace when she wraps her arms around my shoulders, her height putting her face uncomfortably close to my breasts. She's in a low-cut red dress, one that shows off impressive curves and olive skin. She's not traditionally pretty, but has the sort of face that is transformed when she smiles, her energy infectious. Her husband is more of the strong and silent type, a courteous gentleman who rises alongside Trey and extends a polite hand toward me. He is our Mark, his upscale department store's the perfect home for our lingerie. We are in town for an expo, and Edward apparently loves any excuse to gamble. Trey was just telling us all about you. Mira leans forward, tucking a dark curl behind her ear and lowering her voice as if this is a secret of some sort. He said you used to work at Laverne and Lily. I did. I make a face. It wasn't nearly as much fun as working for Marks. She gives me a knowing smile. Oh, I believe that. I worked with Trey before. I know how well he keeps his co-workers entertained. She steals a shrimp off the appetizer platter and turns to Trey. Isn't that right, Trey? Trey attempts to give her a stern glare, one that loses its impact in the curve of his mouth.
It's not like that, Mira.
Goosebumps pop along my arm, and I study her face, the way she smirks at him before dipping the shrimp into sauce. From under the table, I feel Trey's hand settle on my thigh, his fingers squeezing, a brief warning that is entirely unnecessary. I'm sorry, I smile politely. I didn't realize that you two worked together.
It was at Bloomingdale's.
Trey lifts his glass, the ice cubes settling in the amber liquid.
Mira worked in their accounts department.
I seduced the poor boy. She interrupts grandly, holding up her wine glass to her husband, who lifts the bottle. I watch the dark red wine pour, and wonder exactly how many Bloomingdale's employees he went through. And honestly, he didn't have a chance.
I wasn't exactly a boy, Mira.
Trey lounges, his arm reaching behind my seat, the tips of his fingers brushing against my back.
I was 24, same as you.
I was wise beyond my years. She turns to her husband, who seems completely unconcerned about their history. Wasn't I, babe?
Still are.
He leans forward, setting down the wine bottle.
That's why you get along with me so well. I'm immature and you're ancient.
She scoffs. Trey chuckles. And I feel a combination of jealousy and confusion. I lift my drink and steal another glance at Mira. This one more appraising. I've seen a handful of Trey's dates, most the long-legged kind who don't concern themselves with breakouts, limp hair, extra pounds. But Mira? She is a real woman. One whose nose is a little too big on her face, her features pleasant, but not breathtaking, her body shape one that could shop at Lane Bryant as easily as Saks. She catches my eye and smiles, and her easy confidence is overwhelming. I swallow a sip of my mojito and search for something to say. Edward, you met Mira through Bloomingdale's also?
I did.
He had smile lines around his eyes. His head a thick pile of silver and gray, somewhere in his 50s, with the same sort of lean build that Craig had. Probably a swimmer or cyclist.
She was my account manager.
How long were you with Bloomingdale's? I asked Mira, taking a roll. God, 2 years? The longest 2 years of my life. But hey. She hugs Edward's arm. It was worth it for this lug of sexuality. She glances at Trey. Hell, relationship building was the only real benefit of that place, right? He shifts in his seat, and I pick up on his tension. The rigid tap of his finger against his spoon, the way he clears his throat.
Have you guys made it to Aspen yet this year?
She leans forward and launches into a long and moderately funny story about a ski trip. I cut my fillet and watch Trey,
wondering at his tension, the abrupt change in conversation. He glances at me, and I meet his eyes, a question in the look. What's going on? He looks away. Maybe it is just Mira's comment, the thinly veiled reference to Vika and his relationship. But it seems like something else. He hadn't wanted me at this dinner at all. I glance at Mira and wonder if there is something else I am missing. Mira smiles at me, and I realize that the table has fallen quiet, everyone looking at me in the expectant way that follows a question. I swallow the bit of steak.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Edward is leaving tonight, flying back home for a meeting. I was wondering if you could show me your new collections in the morning.
Of course.
I smile, ignoring the hard press of Trey's ankle against mine.
I'd be happy to. Maybe we could grab lunch at Lago and go over it there.
I could join you.
Trey leans in, and I position the heel of my stiletto in the vicinity of his shoe, his foot quickly moving out of the way.
That's not necessary. I beam at him. You go do your manly stuff, slot machines and whatnot. Let us have some girl time.
Mira giggles against her wine glass, and Trey smiles tightly at me, a noticeable tick in his cheek. I take a long pull of Merlot and wonder again, what the hell is he so worried about?
Chapter 10. Trey. Mira's hands grip Kate's shoulders, and she kisses her cheek, smiling warmly and promising to see her tomorrow at noon. There is no way in hell that lunch is happening, but I'll take that up with Mira tonight, once I get her away from Kate. I aged 5 years during that dinner, my heart in my throat whenever Mira so much as opened her mouth. I've forgotten how much, without a dick in her mouth, she talks. I'll fix that problem tonight. She reaches for me, and I accept her hug, not reacting when she whispers her room number in my ear. I step away from her and extend a hand to Edward, his smile cordial. Have a safe flight, I say.
Certainly. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
He releases my hand, and we step apart. I turn to Kate and reach for her hand, our goodbye involving another round of salutations before we are through the restaurant and into the casino. Want to play some slots? I eye the blackjack tables where Mira and Edward are headed.
Sure, she replies cheerfully. As long as you're paying.
Of course. I place my hand on the small of her back, forcing myself to not caress the skin there. My steps brisk until we get to the private section of high-limit slots. I pause, reaching into my wallet, and am stopped by Kate's stern look, her perky smile gone. I smell an ambush before she even opens her mouth.
You prick with a dick.
She crosses her arms over her chest and leans against the closest slot machine. I look back down at my wallet, pulling out a handle of hundreds and buying myself a second to think. I close my wallet and stick it into my pocket.
What? I told you I knew her.
Knew her?
Yes, that's a bit of an understatement. Did you fuck everyone at Bloomingdale's?
That earns her a smirk, my eyes taking a greedy trip down her body, lingering on the way her dress clings. I managed some restraint at times.
Don't,
she warns. And, God, I love it when she gets worked up. I turn to the closest slot machine, feeding a bill into the machine in an attempt to keep myself from touching her. It was a long time ago. She's married now. What difference does it make?
Her marriage didn't stop her from eye-fucking you across the table.
I glance at her, then push the button and watch the rails spin. Easy, Kate. Your jealousy is showing. She growls.
I'm not jealous. I'm intelligent. Our client is her husband. Are you too stupid to realize that he's not going to stalk anything from someone his wife is attracted to?
I think you're wrong.
I reach down and grab her hand, pulling her toward the machine. Her struggle cute in a way that gets me hard as a rock. Stop fighting me. I'm not fucking you against the reels. I just want you to push the button. Give me some lady luck. I slide my hand atop hers and gently push, the machine coming to life. She pauses her fight, watching the roll of lights, and slumps slightly when they come up mismatched. She goes to move away, and I move closer, trapping her. My chest against her back, her ass against me in a way that lights my senses on fire. A few more. I speak against the back of her neck, her hair tickling my nose, my mouth close enough that if I wanted to, I could drive her insane with just the brush of my lips against that skin. My hand still over hers, I give it a bit of pressure, using the excuse to push against her body. My cock pressing along the perfect curve of her ass. Her inhale, one that I will replay 100 times over. Watch it, I order. You're too close to me, she says. And her voice is husky. All fucking woman in every syllable of the words. You want me to move back? I press the button under her hand, my hips thrusting again, and she sags back against me. God, she'd be so easy to please. In 5 minutes, I could make her mine. In 10 minutes, she'd be calling me her god. In 20, I could propose, and she'd beg me for a lifetime more. Tell me, Kate. Tell me, and I'll give you all the space you want. Her hand moves beneath mine, slowly pushing the button, her ass arching against me, and I close my eyes in reverence, sending a thank you up to the God who created this perfect woman. She stiffens, and I open my eyes, almost falling forward as she spins toward me. All sexuality gone from her eyes. And I flinch when she shrieks, her arms flying into the air. We won! She yells. And if that is all it takes to get a woman out from under my touch, I need to up my fucking game. I step back, glancing at the slot machine, which shows a trio of treasure chests. Great, I mutter, watching her spin back to the machine, her chin tilting back, her finger raising as she finds the prize display. 1,000 credits! She shrieks again, her voice at a pitch that fighting cats frequent. How much is a credit? 25... Trey, we won $25,000! Yippee, I say dryly, and I'd give all of it up to have her ass back where it belongs, flush against my cock. I glare at the machine, which blinks and dings with annoying cheer. Room 1472. I stand at the double doors and contemplate my options. Mira isn't the type to lord sex over a sale. She'll have Edward order whatever we want, despite my cock's activities or lack of it. I can certainly decline her offer. But that'd be a little ridiculous, given the rare times that our paths cross. I haven't been with her in 2 years. Our last time in San Diego, 3 hours spent in every position known to man. She is my easy fix, the non-complicated sort that never pulls out a gun and steals my car. I eye her door and consider, one last time, returning to my room, to a jack-off session and sleepless night, all one thin wall apart from Kate. I groan and reach forward, quickly rapping on the door, before I can change my mind. A release will be good for me. It will get my mind off her. It will flush my system and remind me of all the reasons that Kate and I can't, won't, ever work. The door swings open, and Edward stands there, his jacket and tie gone, his shirt sleeves rolled up, his feet bare on the plush carpet. Trey. He steps back. Come on in. Mira is waiting for us. 2 hours later, I close the door to the suite and walk down the hall, my jacket over my arm. My shirt rumpled from her nails, a button near the top cleanly ripped off. I examine the loose thread and grin, shaking my head at the thought of her. God, I forgot what a hellion she is, how she can pounce on your body and ride you like a fucking bull. I step on the elevator and press the button for my floor, catching my reflection in the metal doors. I look like a mess. I step closer to it, tilting my head to the side to examine the hickey that runs along my collarbone. I pull up my collar and frown, the mark not entirely hidden. Damn woman. I'll have to button up and wear a tie tomorrow. I'm smiling as I step onto my floor, my mind in a better place than it had been 2 hours earlier. That's the value of Mira and Edward, even more than the orgasms. They are a reminder that there is nothing wrong with me, that we are all consenting adults who enjoy pleasure in whatever form brings the most of it. If Mira likes getting 2 or 4 or 10 cocks at once, that's her business and nobody else's. If I like a husband to watch me fuck his wife, or I enjoy competing for orgasms, why should society judge me for it? I get it, though. I understand the stigma, the flinch of the mind when confronted with the idea. Hell, the first time Mira set it up, had I not been horny as hell and twice as drunk, I'd have probably run the other way. But it had only turned me on more, thinking of fucking her in front of an audience, in front of another man, one who wanted her just as badly, or more than I did. The competitiveness of it is an aphrodisiac, one so intense that normal sex can pale in comparison. Normal sex has, for a while, paled in comparison. I stop in front of my room and dig in my pockets for the keycard, sliding it through the lock and pushing open the door, reaching for the light switch, and stopping. On my bed, curled into a ball, her dark hair spread out on my pillow, is Kate. A remote hangs limply from her hand, her face illuminated by the screen, a black and white show running. I quietly pull the door closed and step into the bathroom, brushing my teeth and changing out of my clothes. I consider the shower and decide to wait, needing to get Kate back to her room before my cock comes back to life. I pull on workout pants and look for my t-shirt, getting frustrated as I dig through the suitcase. I'm turning back to the closet when I see my shirt on her. The bright blue fabric loud against the white sheets. I smile despite myself, walking over and carefully taking the remote before turning off the television, the room falling dark. I pull back the covers and slide my hands underneath her, gathering her into my arms, her body falling limply against my bare chest. I steal a moment and lean in, inhaling her scent, one of fresh soap and flowers, a combination I've gotten whiffs of but never fully sampled. I step slowly through the open door into her dimly lit room and make my way to her bed, the covers already pulled back and waiting for her. I stop, looking down at the bed, not yet ready to let her go, not yet ready to part. Maybe I should have left her on my bed. Maybe I should have laid down beside her and curled against her body. I could be there, my body pressed against hers, right now. I could spend all night with my mouth against her shoulder and her legs against mine. I almost step back, but don't. It doesn't feel right doing that tonight. Not when I've spent hours with Mira and left her here alone. I feel her stir and I glance down, watching her eyes open, the slow movement of them as they search the dark and find my face. She smiles and my arms tighten around her. I'm heavy, she whispers. Nah. How long have you been just standing there staring at me? I can't stop the grin that stretches over my face. It's creepy, right?
Totally creepy.
She shifts, curling tighter against me, her hand fisting against my chest. Her eyes drop to the bare skin,
then dart back to my face.
You're naked.
She says the word with evil pride, as if she is a small child who has just caught an adult misbehaving and can't wait to tell someone. I shake my head. Sorry to disappoint you, but I'm wearing pants. I just couldn't find my shirt. I narrow my eyes at her, then pointedly drop the glare down to the shirt. Her eyes roam over my shoulders, and she smiles. I would apologize, but I'm enjoying the repercussions of my crime. She pats my chest. How long are you planning on holding me up? I look down at the bed. Not much longer. I bend over and extend her over the bed, smiling as she burrows into my neck. Her deep inhale not much different than my own had been. I gently set her onto the mattress and straighten, my arms sliding through hers. When her grip clamps down on my forearm, her eyes going from sleepy to sharp. Trey? My stomach clenches at the accusatory way she says my name. Why do you smell like Mira's perfume? I meet her eyes, and in that connection, she knows. She doesn't know everything, but she knows I fucked her, and that is enough. Kate pushes out of my arms, sliding across the bed to the other side. Kate, I plea. This is bad. This is fucking bad. Made worse because I can't explain it to her. Shut up. She snaps her hands, pulling at the sheet, covering herself as if she is naked. She looks away. I literally have nothing to say to you. It didn't mean anything. I press the fingers of my hand into my forehead, rubbing at the stress points there. Why didn't I take a fucking shower? But the answer to that is easy. Kate Martin was in my bed. That makes it even worse. Her eyes widen, and in them I see her hurt. What if Edward finds out? I think of Edward, how he reached down, gripping her chin and lifting it, how her eyes had met his, the rock of her body not stopping their contact. Tell me, he had ordered. Do you like how he fucks you? Yes, sir, she had answered, and he had smiled, pulling down the zipper of his pants. Edward isn't going to find out. Edward knows. I want to scream. Stop worrying about work or our precious order. Everything is fine. I have a brief moment of insanity, one where I want to tell her everything, to try and explain it all, but I don't. I can't. This isn't my secret to tell. There are other lives involved, other reputations at stake. Would Mira care? Probably not. But that's not my call to make. And even if it were, could I tell Kate? Could I really tell her that Edward and I took turns with Mira? That he held back her hair and told her to suck my cock? I can't. There is no way. Tears leak out of the corner of her eyes, and I feel a piece of me break. God damn it, Kate, I say softly. Just forget it, please. She rolls over on the bed, her back to me. Go away, Trey. Just let me sleep. Leaving her is the last thing I want to do. We need to discuss this, to talk this through, to get back to us. But it's hard to talk through it when I can't explain my actions, my motivations. I have nothing to say, no defense to give. I move back a step, then another. I wait for a long moment in the doorway, considering what this will do to our relationship, what this will mean. She doesn't turn, and I pull the adjoining door closed, the act feeling almost ceremonial in its division of us. Maybe this is it, the death of our possibilities. Maybe I need this reminder of the differences between her and me, of all the ways that even without the company dividing us, we would never work. Maybe I should use this excuse, this opportunity, to mentally push away. She won't ever accept what happened between Mira Edward and me. I swallow that reality and I head to the shower, anxious to wash away everything. If this evening was lingerie, it'd be expensive. The kind that seems worth the price tag, but isn't.
The kind that leaves your wallet empty and your mind fucked.
Kate. It's official. The man's penis only knows stupid mistakes. First that crazy mugger woman, and now this. A married woman. I bet Edward wasn't even out of the hotel before Trey was knocking on her door. Had I even been a thought? You'd think if the man was going to destroy everything, he might have at least glanced my way. At least considered me before risking the wrath of our client by sleeping with his wife. I lay in the dark room, gripping a pillow against my chest, and listened to the click of the air conditioner as it comes on. My heart gallops against my chest, my arms tighten around the pillow, and I want to scream. But instead, I only growl. I tell myself that it's not jealousy, but it is. It's jealousy and regret and months of sexual frustration. Why her? Why not a Vegas hooker or a horny tourist? Why risk this account, one that we need? All to fucking ex-girlfriend. If he's so cavalier about the risk to the company, then why not date me? I roll onto my back and force my arms to relax, to flop back on the mattress. My mind relaxes slightly. Maybe it's because, despite all of his flirting and our latent chemistry, I'm not his type. Maybe all of my sexual tension is one-sided, and he's operating in a purely platonic world where he flirts for the sheer fun of it and is oblivious to the delusional fantasies of my starved sex drive. I consider knocking on his door and just asking him, flat out, to explain himself. But abandon the thought. My nerves are too frayed to have that conversation face to face, in an environment where all of my reactions and emotions will be seen. No way to play the cool, aloof girl in that scenario. I roll over, pick up my phone, and compose a text. Are you attracted to me? Women aren't supposed to ask questions like that. We should be pursued. We should always know our power. But I don't. And I need to know. He's my best friend. And we shouldn't have to tiptoe around our feelings. We should be able to have a rational and open discussion about this ridiculously huge thing that has been dominating my spare thought processes for the last... hell, even before Craig and I ended. My phone beeps, and I pick it up off the bedspread. Devastatingly so. I stare at the response, my heart pulled between elation and fear, a flood of new questions arising. I mull them over and wait for him to ask me the same question, but the phone stays dark. Should I tell him that I feel the same way? No, I can't. I roll onto my back and hesitantly type out the next question, reading over it several times before I press send. Then why aren't we together? I lay the phone on my chest and stare at the ceiling. Part of me regrets bringing this up. What if he wants to start a relationship? Do I even want that? I've known him for 14 months, and he hasn't had a steady girlfriend that entire time. Would he be... good boyfriend material? Can he be loyal? Is he romantic? Too many questions and no answers. I pick up my phone and double-check that my text was delivered. It shouldn't take this long to respond, to provide a simple answer to such an important question. I close my eyes and attempt to relax, focusing on my feet and slowly moving up my body, relaxing one muscle group at a time, my arms loose and rubbery by the time my phone finally dings. I slowly roll to my side and lift my phone, reading his response. Too much at risk. The brevity of it irritates me, as if he didn't have the energy to go into greater detail. But in those four words, I understand his stance. It's the same logic I've told myself 100 times. He went down this road with Vika, and his company had tanked as a result.
Dating Trey could ruin Mark's lingerie's forward progress, not to mention our friendship. In some ways, our bond seems unflappable. In other ways, we seem as fragile as glass. No one else can hurt me like this. No one else's opinion is as important. No one else can break my heart as easily as he could mend it. If he thinks there is too much at risk, then fine. I can cross Trey Marks off my list of prospects and dive back into the world of dating. I can find someone else. Someone better for me. Someone without consequences. I can find a relationship that, if it ends, won't destroy every other part of our lives. I don't need Trey in my bed as my boyfriend. I can be happy having him everywhere else. I don't know if it's a lie or not, and in this moment, I don't care. I wrap my hand around my phone, slide it under the pillow, and close my eyes. I wake to a note from Mira, one slipped under my door, her handwriting big and flowery. In it, she cancels our lunch, full of apologies and promises to find me on a future trip. The note is attached to a purchase order, one that Trey must have prepared. The unit count enough to make our quarter, if not our year. I roll my eyes and toss it onto the bed. There is a knock on the adjoining door and I open it, giving Trey a tight smile and returning to my suitcase, the zipper difficult. He pushes down on the lid and I work it closed. Thanks.
Certainly.
He is in khakis and a polo, the bright blue cotton setting off his tan. This is Country Club Trey, the preppy look that used to get me hot. The clean-cut exterior so easily twisted with just one smoldering eye-fuck. Used to get me hot. Today I am a new woman, one perfectly content in my best friend and creative director roles, one who doesn't wonder what he looks like naked, or what that delicious mouth is capable of. He strolls over to the bed, reaching forward and picking up the items from Mira.
What's this?
He flips over the top page, his head dropping as he reads over it.
I thought she was sending this to me.
Did you see the note? I say brightly. She canceled our lunch.
Yeah, I told her to.
He glances at me.
I figured you wouldn't want to eat with her after...
He grimaces.
You know.
Oh, yes. I smile again, and his eyes narrow. I know. I step forward and pluck the pages back. I would have been fine having lunch with her. I don't need you running around and rearranging my schedule.
I'm sorry.
He doesn't sound sorry. He sounds unsettled, which makes me ridiculously happy. I can do this. I can be the cool girl, the friend who doesn't care that her friend, her boss, is devastatingly attracted to her. I can roll my eyes at his slutty antics and go off and marry a different Prince Charming. We can build this company, be friends, and I can have smoking hot sex and babies who have nothing to do with Trey Marks. I can have it all. I can. I will. He looks at me and I look at him. And if he kisses me right now, I would fall apart under his touch. He holds the gaze, and I look away, afraid of what my eyes might show. Chapter 11 Kate 4 months later, I find my prince in a coffee shop downtown. Or rather, he finds me. Kate? I look up and swallow the sip of coffee, my eyes darting over all of the details. Soft brown hair, void of product, pale green eyes, the kind that smile. He wears glasses, and I unconsciously touch my own, glad that I'd skip the contacts today. His features are as advertised, a classic profile set off by straight, perfect teeth, and an adorably crooked nose. A blue sweater, the fabric snug around a manly build, his height tall enough that I can wear heels and still be shorter. I rise and extend a hand. Hi. You must be Stephen. We shake hands, and it is a good handshake,
firm but not businesslike. His hands soft and warm, everything about him reassuringly conservative. "Please sit down." He pulls out the opposite seat and settles into it. And there is a moment of awkward silence, one where I sip my coffee and he straightens his glasses, and I can't, for the life of me, think of a single thing to say. Our eyes meet, he smiles, and I laugh despite myself.
"This is my 5th blind date," he admits. "You'd think I'd have learned something aside from my name by now."
"My 8th," I smile. "You look like you recently bathed, so you don't really have to say anything. You're already ahead of the rest." It's a lie, and he knows it. But he leans forward, and conversation begins to flow.
"So, you work in retail?"
He tucks his hands into his pockets as we walk, his head down, ear cocked to me. "Sort of. I work for an undergarments company. We supply to retail shops and some high-end chains."
"Undergarments? Like underwear? Hosiery?"
I nod, pulling back my hair into a low ponytail. "Yes, less hosiery and more of the delicate items. Bras, panties, garters, baby dolls. The sexier stuff. Our lines are fairly provocative." Trey would have made a sly comment, worked a compliment in. But Stephen only nods, his face a mask of concentration.
"And what do you do for the company?"
"I model." The joke falls flat, and he only nods as if I am serious, as if there is any chance of my frame on a cover. "I'm joking," I hurry. "I'm the creative director. I'm responsible for the overall vision and the execution of it." I feel the burst of pride that comes whenever I say my title.
"That's nice."
We take the path into the park, a canopy of trees providing a break from the sun. His arm rushes mine, a reminder of where I am and who I am with. Not Trey, who is accustomed to my long stretches of silence, but this man who probably thinks I'm odd. I'm trying to think of something to say when he speaks.
"How long have you been there?"
I relax a bit. "A year and a half."
"Do you enjoy it?"
"I do," I say honestly. "Trey is very good to work for. We get along well."
"That's nice."
I ask him what he does, and learn that he is an oral surgeon. A fancy dentist, as he says. He travels 2 days a week, has a rescued dog, and a mother in Chula Vista. We both love sushi and hate Star Wars. We are both Words with Friends enthusiasts, and, unless I am misreading the look in his eye, we both want to see each other again. We end our walk at the parking lot. Ahead of us, my bright red Mercedes convertible sits, a gift from Trey when we hit last year's sales goal. He reaches into his pocket and a new Volvo SUV beeps.
"That's me."
He turns to me and smiles. It's a nice smile, one warm and friendly. He steps forward, and my heart speeds up. A kiss? My first kiss since Craig. Would I remember how to do it properly? He extends a hand.
"Thank you for meeting me, and for not being a serial killer."
I laugh and take his hand. "Agreed. I was actually planning on being a serial killer, but decided against it. My day is kind of full. Meetings." I smile, and I think he can tell I'm joking. He steps back and waves.
"I'll call you, if that is okay."
"It is." I return the wave and wait for him to turn, to walk away.